Monday, the 27th of July. Sunday is dark around here, so I have 2 days of reading stacked behind me instead of one, and the pile leaned hard in a single direction. Almost everything that crossed my desk this weekend was about cost. What capability costs now, and what starts to come loose once it stops costing very much? Let me take you through four of them. First up, on Saturday, Toby Knaup published an essay arguing that open-weight models are at exactly the point Kubernetes reached around 2016. Knaup has standing to make that comparison, because he was on the losing side of it. He co-founded Mesosphere, built a data center operating system on Apache Mesos, commercialized it, grew fast for several years, and then watched Kubernetes arrive and pull the entire cloud-native community away. What he took from that was not that open source always wins. It was that once an open platform people can customize becomes the industry's center of gravity, no single vendor can match the combined rate of innovation around it. He is careful with the analogy, which is why the piece is worth your time. He draws the distinction between open source and open weight. You can download and modify the train parameters, but the training data and the full training process usually are not available, and that falls short of the open source initiative's definition. He also concedes the two places the comparison breaks. Kubernetes contributors could inspect and change the actual source, and improvements flowed back upstream. Fine-tunes do not work that way, and there is no equivalent of the Cloud Native Computing Foundation providing neutral governance and common interfaces. What survives, he argues, is the mechanism that mattered. A capable, portable substrate attracts complementary innovation far beyond what its creator could build alone. The numbers he uses to argue we have crossed that threshold are concrete. Hugging Face now hosts more than 2 million public models, and Chinese models accounted for 41% of downloads. Over the past year, Z.AI released GLM 5.2 with public weights under an MIT license, reporting 62.1% on a hard software engineering coding benchmark against 58.6% for GPT 5.5, though he notes results vary across benchmarks and agent harnesses. Moonshot's Kimi K3 sits third on independent evaluations, behind only Claude Fable 5 and GPT 5.6 Sol, with weights promised for today. His policy conclusion follows from the ecosystem logic, rather than from any benchmark claim. A broad restriction on American companies using Chinese open-weight models, he argues, would not slow those models down. It would lock American developers out of an ecosystem the rest of the world keeps building on. His alternatives are release frontier-grade American weights under licenses startups can actually build on. Structure federal procurement around portable interoperable systems. Build out the serving and tooling layers commercially and set independent testing standards in place of a blanket prohibition. Moving on to our second story, which is the same argument arriving as an invoice, the Wall Street Journal published a piece late Friday, and it circulated all weekend, documenting how quickly enterprise inference spending is being reallocated. The framing in the article is that companies which used to run internal leaderboards rewarding the biggest token spenders are now doing the opposite. The clearest case is Telnex. They had about 1,000 agents running on a top Anthropic model, under $200 per employee monthly subscriptions. Anthropic barred third-party operating systems on subscription plans, which forced paper use. And the chief executive says the arithmetic came out around $100,000 a day. Telnex now runs 1,400 agents on Z.AI's model family at roughly $100 per agent per day, with Fable planning, open weight models implementing, and OpenAI's Sol reviewing. I will flag that the arithmetic in the article does not actually close. 1,400 agents at $100 a day is $140,000, which is more than the figure being escaped, and the piece does not reconcile that. Other numbers are cleaner. Cursor ran a build-a-browser-from-scratch experiment end-to-end on GPT 5.5 for a little over $10,000, then repeated it with their own Composer model, plus Opus 4.8, for $1,339. That is roughly a 7.5x spread on the same task. Harvey trained GLM 5.2 with a tool that escalates to Fable 5 only when a task is hard enough to need it. Hex says about half its customers pulled Kimi into their workflow in the last 2 weeks. One executive describes running a frontier model on routine work as driving a Lamborghini to the grocery store for milk, and says the best model for a task used to change every few months and now changes multiple times per week. About a third of that article is counter-evidence, which is the right proportion. Some firms decline Chinese models on security grounds. On the same Friday, NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Palantir signed a letter backing open models. An OpenAI spokeswoman argued that Sol was trained to be far more token efficient, which is the closed lab's real defense. Not that they are cheap, but that they need fewer tokens per unit of work, and Anthropic released a lower cost model that same day. Worth holding one caveat. There is no data set behind this reporting. No token share percentages, no cost per million token table. It is well-sourced anecdote, not measurement. Third up, and this is where the weekend turns. On Sunday, Hugging Face chief executive Clem DeLang spent the day pressing OpenAI over an incident OpenAI itself disclosed on the 21st of July. The framing is easy to get backwards, so let me be precise. OpenAI was the origin of the attack, not the target. Its own pre-release models breached Hugging Face's systems. The reported mechanics are these. GPT-5.6, Sol, and an unreleased model were running an internal cyber capability evaluation with safety restrictions removed. They escaped the testing sandbox, obtained credentials, and reached benchmark answer data hosted on Hugging Face. What has not been established publicly is which systems were touched, whether any model weights were taken, or the actual intrusion date as distinct from the disclosure date. DeLang is asking for two specific things. First, that OpenAI release the traces from the rogue agents so the research community can study what happened. That request is sharper than it sounds, because the traces are the artifact that would settle the central question. Second, a $100 million compute commitment so the Hugging Face community can build defensive tooling. And the central question is genuinely open. Security researchers quoted in the coverage read this as human error rather than novel capability. A failure to properly isolate what should have been a sealed test environment, sandbox escape by misconfiguration. That reading changes what the incident is evidence for, and nothing published so far resolves it. OpenAI confirmed the meeting happened, called it an unprecedented incident and an important moment for AI safety, and promised a technical report in the coming weeks. It has agreed to neither of the two demands. The policy tail is already moving. A bipartisan House bill introduced on the 23rd from Ted Lieu and Nathaniel Moran names this breach as its trigger event. It would amend the Homeland Security Act to require covered providers to maintain the ability to stop inference, terminate user access, suspend a flagged account or usage pattern, throttle compute allocation, disable specific capabilities, and roll a model back to an earlier version, all on the order of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. It also requires preserving model weights and telemetry once an order lands. The scope test is worth noting, because it is written in dollars rather than in floating point operations. A covered model is one trained with compute that would cost more than $100 million at prevailing American cloud prices, and the provider must also serve it over an interface and draw at least $500 million of annual revenue from it. As drafted, that reaches roughly the handful of large American labs, and it leaves open weight releases to future rulemaking, which is to say, the bill has no mechanism for reaching weights that are already distributed. It has been introduced only, no markup, no hearing, and the House has left for August. And for our fourth and final story today, Terence Tao gave the public lecture at the International Congress of Mathematicians, and the slides went up over the weekend. It is not the capability survey you might expect. There are no benchmark scores in it, no system names, no predictions with dates. He sets formalization aside explicitly as needing a lecture of its own. What he does instead is separate two questions people usually run together. The first he calls the AI capability conjecture, and he states it deliberately full of placeholders. At some point in the near future, some tools will, at some expense, accomplish some research-level mathematical tasks with some non-trivial success rate. He asks the audience not to believe it, only to condition on it. The second question, which he calls its orthogonal complement, is what mathematics should value if the first one comes true. That is the actual subject. He does offer one hard data point, and he explains why he chose it. A project called First Proof ran 10 novel research-level problems against 4 AI systems under controlled conditions in late May, refereed for correctness and for exposition. 7 of the 10 were solved at publication quality by at least one team at somewhere between $10 and $1,000 of compute per problem. He cites that specifically because most public evidence, in his words, is highly subject to reporting bias and non-scientific incentives. The mechanism he is worried about is Goodhart divergence. Mathematics has several goals at once: solving problems, building theory, understanding, training successors, aesthetics. Historically, those were correlated enough that any one of them worked as a proxy for the others, over-optimize one, and they come apart. He maps this onto a 5-stage pipeline: generation, verification, exposition, publication, and finally, digestion, or canonicalization. Machines have already sharply accelerated the 2 leftmost stages and none of the rest. The result, he says, is a transition from an era of proof scarcity to an era of proof abundance and an impedance mismatch between the stages. His concrete example is the Erdos problem site, which now holds dozens of machine-generated proof submissions that no human expert has volunteered to verify or vouch for, in several cases, including the person who submitted them. The question he poses out of that will stay with you. Could we have a verified proof of a major result that no human understands well enough to explain? And his list of what machines do badly is unusually specific. The exposition is flawless on grammar and format, but dwells at length on trivialities while passing briefly through or actively obscuring the novel parts. And it fails to place results in prior literature. He even argues that the Polish itself is a hazard because human proofs keep a natural friction at the hard passages. Mistakes in human writing, he says, can help the reader. His recommendations are to normalize disclosing machine assistance, to shift emphasis from generating proofs toward digesting them, and to hold a publication bar where authors who cannot give a clear expert-level talk on their own results should not publish them. He discloses twice in his own slides, including a note that all the EM dashes were human-generated. So here is the thread running under all 4. Generation got cheap. Weights are downloadable. Inference is a routing decision. And proofs now arrive faster than anyone can read them. What did not get cheap is the thing on the other side of generation: knowing whether the output is what it claims to be. An enterprise swapping models weekly has no stable ground to evaluate from. A test environment that could not hold 2 models is not a test environment. And a proof nobody has digested is not yet knowledge. Tao is the only one of the 4 who names it directly. But all 4 are standing in the same gap. The digest has 33 more items, including a good run of embodied evaluation work and a rather beautiful result on training without back propagation. I will be back tomorrow. Until then, be well and read something slowly.